At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, and welcome to episode number 248 of the LSR Podcast. My name is Matt Brown, joined each and every week by the brightest minds in all of the gaming industry. With me, I have Adam Candy. You can find him over on the X. First time I've ever said that. I always said the Twitter. I know. I've never said it before. It felt weird. I'm never doing it again. I'm gonna call it the Twitter until the day I die. So over on the Twitter machine, at Adam Candy, that's two E's, no Y. If you hate yourself, you can follow me at Matt Brown M2. Not a crazy amount of news coming out of the holiday here, Adam, but we decided instead of skipping a week, it is heading into football season, and we decided, hey, let's talk about some of the topics that we'll be paying attention to as we head into football season. The first and foremost is kind of like, hey, what is this, let's not even say opening weekend, what is this opening month of football season going to look like from an ad standpoint? Are we going to see all the big boys coming in really, really hard right from the get-go? Are we going to see some of the newbies? If you live in a state where 365 is starting to make a push, are you going to see a bunch of that? What about Fanatics? What are we going to get with all that? So it kind of comes down to, we know for sure that, because we saw some announcements, there will be at least some of these guys coming back, some of the Mannings and whatnots of the world that are going to be helping some of these sports books promote. But how much, how often is kind of what we're looking for.
And I think not only us within the industry, but sports fans at large. And then once we get to the bigger discussion of the congressional action that is sitting there, it is not going to go anywhere anytime soon, but certainly would have an effect on the ability of sports books to advertise moving forward. Everyone involved in any of those phases will be paying attention to what's going on right now. So I think the ultimate question comes down to sports books that have said we're not going to spend as much. Are you willing to do that at the beginning of football season, right? Mm-hmm. Like, are you willing to do that at the primest of prime acquisition times for customers? And there are bigger questions at play here, right? Does anyone think that certain customers that were at some of the smaller sports books that have shut down are available? Probably not a huge question for us to answer, so we'll kind of start in reverse order here. We then look and say, all right, if you're looking at the DraftKings customers, are you thinking that DraftKings potentially could be a little soft based on everything that just happened with the surcharge, right? Are some of their bettors potentially ones that you might want to go after with some sort of value propositions, okay? I think you also then naturally begin to look at the new entrants, and that's really where we're focused at the moment. You talk about 365 and their new states. You then talk about North Carolina going through its first full football season of an online launch. And then, of course, you look at what Fanatics and, of course, ESPN Bet are going to do coming into this football season. And we're curious in terms of that customer acquisition part, but specific to the advertising, like you said, Matt, that's where people tend to really notice the nexus between sports betting and sports at large is when they tune into a football broadcast and they say, oh my God, I can't get away from the sportsbook ads, right? And so how will that be handled? I believe it will be handled somewhat responsibly because I don't think it's been overwhelming here in the past. And maybe it's just having too much context from the DFS days and what it looked like at that time. And I think it's better than that. Maybe better than that isn't better enough for some people out there. We'll find out more. There's another question when it comes to advertising. Where are the DFS Plus 2.0 Flex companies going to fit into the equation as well? I know last year when I would listen to NFL radio broadcasts on Westwood One, you could not swing a microphone without hitting a Prize Picks ad. They were all over the place. And I know that radio is a value proposition for advertising for a lot of companies, but that's one that'll add to it as well in terms of how many companies are out there trying to make their wares known.
Yeah, the other thing that I'm at least minimally interested in, and I don't know if we're to that point quite yet. We still are fairly early in the game. I know us that follow this on a daily basis make it almost feels like we've been in this a long time, but I do wonder when, and more specifically from a DraftKings and FanDuel aspect than from the other books, when we start seeing some of these retention / reactivation offers, you know, coming out to some people out there, right? I mean, I know you get the bonus bets when you log in and things like that, but I'm talking more of the along the lines of, hey, re-up $1,000 and we'll give you X, or hey, we miss you, you've been gone, you know, whatever, stuff like that. And whether we actually start seeing that in actual advertising, because the thing is, Adam, is like, sure, maybe you log into the app after a long time and they greet you with the, oh, hey, we hadn't seen you in a long time. But if you're never logging back into the app, if you've foregone going into DraftKings or FanDuel or something like that, you know, reaching that person that used to be one of your customers that used to be active and trying to figure out if there's a way to get them back active or not. I'm just, you know, again, we might not be quite there yet. Maybe we're still a couple of years away from that, but that certainly will be a thing at some point, because acquisition just naturally, yes, there will always be people turning 21 and whatever, but like naturally acquisition will have to at some point kind of at least somewhat take a little bit of a backseat to getting these people that you had at one point and then don't have any longer.
Well, the question is, who are you telling your story to, right? I think you have a different situation if you're someone who is a privately held company versus a company that has to go to the market and tell a story about why you should believe in their growth plan, right? Mm-hmm. Because their growth can't just be in terms of revenue. Obviously, that is the bottom line in the long run. But anybody looking at you from a long-term perspective is going to say, okay, great, you were able to squeeze more out of the customers that you had, but where are the new ones coming from? Mm-hmm. And are you going to be able to continue to squeeze from them at the same rate that you either did this quarter or that you have over the last however many years? And I know I'm not really breaking a lot of new ground there, just sort of offering the devil's advocate argument to the idea of, are you going to focus more on retention? Now, that said, I do think that if you're in the position of a DraftKings right now, you probably should be thinking in terms of retention with some of the PR hit that you took over the surcharge plan. And I will tell you that I've heard from some people, they have received at least some offers in their email that are not up to the level of $1,000, but certainly like, hey, we'd love you to come back for $50, for $100, right, etc. That certainly is at least a step in that direction that will be interesting to watch. And you, of course, as someone who has all of those accounts, you'll be watching to see how many of those come in.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you brought up Fanatics, and I think Fanatics is going to be fairly interesting too, right? One, what kind of advertising are we going to see? How much are we going to see? What do they emphasize in their advertisements, right? Because the one thing that we did talk about with Fanatics, Adam, is the fact that they do have something to offer a potential customer that the other ones, I'm not going to say don't, sure, DraftKings and FanDuel, if they wanted to, could buy a warehouse full of merch and give it away. But you get what I'm saying when I say, you know, it's readily available from the Fanatics standpoint of things. And I do wonder, you know, does a commercial every now and then, instead of like always focusing on, you know, the bonuses or the, you know, no sweat bets or whatever and all the different things like that, going to the, hey, actually, come in, make a bet, and pick a jersey. Or, hey, do this, you know, and get a hat or whatever it might be. And if that's actually going to be, you know, set in a commercial as opposed to just a banner ad or whatever and stuff like that. So, I mean, that's something I'm kind of looking at, too, because I'm curious if these people are going to try to lean more into the differentiation thing as opposed to just the, hey, here's $100, and if you lose it, we'll give it back to you in bonus bets. It's like, yeah, I mean, but everyone's doing that, right? Like, can you do something that makes me compelled to sign up at your book or use you because you're a little bit different?
They have the story to tell. We know that they can do that. They have the deep-pocketed owner who can take chances, right? You have someone in Michael Rubin who you can sustain some losses to try to make this thing work. You have someone in Matt King who has done this before and understands the fact that he is working with a different brand than he has. Of course, it's a brand with massive reach, but it doesn't have massive reach in terms of being a sports book. And I get that you want to be able to play in the same sandbox. However, Matt, I believe very much in what you just said, which is that Fanatics has the ability to differentiate in a way that nobody else does. They can appeal to different segments and segments that clearly cross over, right? Matt, you've been a guy into cards and so on for and collectibles and memorabilia. There's such an enormous crossover in those segments that they could lean into harder. And I don't know if that's really been done fully yet, right? And I don't know that they have the opportunity to do that when they're trying to compete on product at the same time that they're trying to compete with a differentiated offer, right? Like the product hasn't quite been there yet, but that's not just unique to Fanatics. We've heard this about product when it comes to a number of sports books playing catch up to DraftKings and FanDuel. So part of it, I think, has to be once you are making that pitch to people and saying, you got to try our sports book. Well, it's got to be ready. It's got to be good to go. And when we get to the discussion on this podcast of ESPN Bet, that's really where part of the issue is going to go, is to say you've had a lot of chatter about how even after the relaunch, after switching from Barstool to ESPN Bet, that the product just still really isn't ready and isn't where it needs to be. And they have touted some improvements to that. We're going to get the real proof in the pudding here in the next few weeks. But it's one thing to say, come play with our product. It's different. It's better. It's another thing to actually prove it out with people.
Yeah, and I think from what, you know, this kind of is a perfect time to kind of head into ESPN Bet, because I think we know what their strategy is going to be from a marketing standpoint, because honestly, they have been, ESPN Bet has been marketed from day one since they launched it, right? It's been integrated into certain programs. They renamed programs into ESPN Bet. You can't watch, you know, a sports center without, unless it's not intrusive or whatever, but like, you know, Erin Kate Dolan comes on and she says, hey, you know, come bet with me, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, they've been advertising all along. And so you can only imagine we're going to see a little bit more of that as we head into football season within their various programs and, you know, radio outlets and things that they have that they can reach potential customers with, Adam. But at the end of the day, this, like I said, I mean, the where the rubber meets the road is going to be like, what is the customer experience like once you do get those people to try you out? And I think that there will be some people, and I'm not going to say, I should not say unsophisticated. That is not the way to say it. But like less savvy bettors that always don't even really know what a good product is. And it's just kind of like, whatever, I'll take it. It is what it is. But I do believe that all you really have to do is try out a second book. And if you, certainly if you try out three or four, you start to really realize, oh, the difference is in these apps. And like, oh, the difference is in these menus. And wow, this actually just works faster, or this just works better, or this has more options for me than this, and et cetera, et cetera. So like the more that we get people even trying a second book, the more we are going to start leaning more into what product means to a customer.
And that has been really the point that we've been at here in year six and a half of this industry for the last, 12 to 18 months at least, is that you've seen MGM and Caesars and now ESPN try to talk about improved product, when the fact of the matter is, we know that from whether you use the Eilers rankings or whether you use your own eyes looking at these apps, that most of these books are trailing DraftKings and FanDuel on product, because DraftKings and FanDuel have been tech companies and have been working on a product for long before the rest of these companies did. And that is the real question for ESPN Bet, because you mentioned a word in there, Matt, that's key to it. Integration, but different than you talked about integration. How seamless can they make the experience from the media app to the betting app? And thus far, the response has been underwhelming, right? And I know our friend Dustin Gawker spent a lot of time looking at this over on his Substack and saying it just isn't as seamless as it needs to be to really take advantage of this. It's not as prominent within the app as it needs to be to get people's attention. And, you know, Jay Snowden, the CEO of Penn Entertainment, said that this is something that they're working on, that this is something that they need to have worked out by football season. And that's the reason, ultimately, that this is the most fascinating story of the 2024 NFL season. Not only are we talking about whether or not Penn management survives this football season based on whether or not they get some results, because we've already seen investor activist investors, I should say, talk about how They want to see results. They've seen billions of dollars of investment without seeing any results from Penn. And the beginnings of the ESPN bet returns have not been good for this company. And so is Penn leadership going to survive this? What is ESPN ultimately trying to get out of this deal, right? Like, I think we have to also ask some questions of ESPN management. Because right now, if you said to me, what does this mean to ESPN? I would say not a lot because of the way that they've handled this, right? You're right. They've done the branding things. They've done some, but I also think when you look at how ESPN has treated this, they seem pretty happy to take that money from Penn and just say, yeah, we have a betting product. They've not gone after this with the fervor that I thought they would. And maybe they don't want to, right? Maybe it's what we talked about all along. Maybe Disney is really not as all in on this concept as we once thought that they were. But Matt, I'll give you an example just from something that we were both watching last night, both watching the US Open tennis last night, watching the Tiafoe-Dimitrov match. And at one point, when they talked about how Tiafoe and Taylor Fritz and Emma Navarro, all three Americans, had all moved into the semifinals, Chris Fowler, one of the voices of ESPN, said, and all three were odds maker underdogs. Odds maker. Not ESPN bet underdogs. Right. Odds maker underdogs. Now, is that because the USTA doesn't want them talking about ESPN bet? Because I've seen minimal integration when it comes to betting and the US Open. But that's another problem that ESPN has to address. How comfortable are their rights holders working in the ESPN bet product into what they do? And if you can't fully leverage that, you can't fully leverage what ESPN bet we thought could become based on the brand reach.
The other thing that I thought, and you know, someone over at ESPN, feel free if you want to, it's fine. Like, you know, you get this freebie on me. But Adam, one of the things I was interested in too is just like, you know, we talk about crossover and obvious crossover and things that we know. Like, you go into the fantasy, like you go into the fantasy page, right? Like, the two fantasy leagues that I'm still in both run through ESPN. Like, they have you a projection from a point total that's listed next to your player as to what they are going to score from a fantasy point standpoint. It's not even intrusive. It's actually might even be helpful if you added a column that showed like what their receiving prop is, like right next to that on the, and then, oh, what do you know? I mean, that's clickable. You know, if you wanted to like go bet that or something, it's just, it seems like so easy. It wouldn't even be intrusive. It actually makes perfect sense in a fantasy app like that. It's like, oh, CeeDee Lamb is, you know, is projected at 78.5 yards this week. Like that's something that wouldn't, no one would even blink an eye at because that makes perfect sense from an integration standpoint. And there's none of that on the fantasy site, like at all, where I'm just kind of going, guys, this seems like low hanging fruit, no brainer stuff right here with all of that. But yeah, no, you go, it just shows you the fantasy point projection and that's all you get.
Well, I'll add one to that, Matt, because I am someone who uses the basic ESPN app for headlines and often for scores as well. And I go into the scores page and I'm looking at a WNBA game and the game is listed out. And the three bets that are listed are point spread, total, money line, right?
Yeah.
But what they did was they listed the favorite with the point spread and the underdog first and only with the money line. And it doesn't make any sense to someone who is a bettor of any thought that you wouldn't either get both of you would either get both money lines, right? Or that you would get the favorite money line also listed next to the favorite on the spread. It's just things that you look and you say they didn't take a lot of care in doing this. And if you were talking about a product that was rushed out in 2018 right after the fall of PASPA, fine, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But it's another when you've had time to think about this and you've had an opportunity to work on this. And that's not ESPN necessarily themselves. That's whoever's working on the integration. We know that they've brought in a new chief technology officer on the Penn side to work on this. But the question that you have to have is, when are we going to see it? Because if we don't see it now in the next, oh, I don't know, 4 days, then what does it matter? Because if Penn and ESPN bet don't succeed in taking some market share. And remember, Jay Snowden talked about this being a product that he believed could take 15 to 20% market share. Well, you haven't cracked 5 yet. And so you're on the clock, and I don't know if you have time to work out these bugs if they don't get fixed quickly. And maybe, I don't know, Matt, maybe we're spending an outsized amount of time talking about someone trying to compete for the number three spot in this market. Yeah. I just think it's still so shocking to both of us that ESPN waited this long to get into it and then bought in with the company that had proven in the Barstool deal that it didn't understand how to monetize a media brand and frankly still is not showing that it knows how to monetize a media brand.
Yeah, we got to, if again, it seems like there's some low-hanging fruit stuff out there that certainly could be done. I would like to think fairly easily integrated as far as that stuff goes. All right, Adam, before we get out of here, we're not going to do three each. We'll just kind of go with some bold predictions as we head into the NFL season. My first and foremost is going to be that the ad blitz actually isn't going to be all that bad, but there's still going to be massive outrage about the amount of ads that people see. Like, it's going to feel like a lot, but it's like, it's really only going to be like one from MGM and then one from DraftKings and then one from FanDuel and then one from Caesars. And it's like, it's going to be like, oh my God, there's so many, but really they're all just buying like one ad, you know, throughout the course of the whole thing. So it's like, when you take a step back, it's like, they're all on level footing. It's not like everyone went absolutely insane, but it's, everyone's going to complain about it anyway. That's at least one prediction from me.
Okay. So to that, the idea of that prediction, let's remember that there are restrictions in place as to how many gambling ads there can be on any NFL broadcast, right? You might feel like you're seeing a bunch, but there can only be so many, and that hasn't changed. If you feel that, I think you're going to feel it because of the DFS companies. I think what you're going to see is that in addition to the exclusive and non-exclusive sportsbook partners of the NFL, of which there are 3 and 7 respectively, that you're also going to have Underdog Fantasy, whether it's a company like Better going out there and pitching more. Who knows if some of these social casinos will try to push more as well. I don't know. We'll find out as that goes on. But in terms of what we're going to see out of this particular NFL season, I want to see who is a clear number three, right? Mm-hmm. I want to see who, because if we get to the point where there's a clear and obvious number three, then we can talk about, will this always just be DraftKings and FanDuel, FanDuel and DraftKings? But as long as there's still a fight for number three and there's no clear tier two operator, then we can't have a real discussion about whether DraftKings and FanDuel will be challenged. Someone has to be a good enough number three in order to do that. And who's involved in that discussion? BetMGM, Caesars, Fanatics, 365, and theoretically ESPN would be in that talk as well. I personally think that BetMGM is pretty well positioned after the Angstrom acquisition to be able to do this. Will they do it? Whole other question, right? It's a company that has needed some time to ramp up. But I will say this for BetMGM, and Matt, you can probably weigh in on this as well. As we've seen them make improvements, they've all been clear improvements over time, right? It has all been incremental steps forward. It's just maybe been a little slower and a little clunkier than we expected.
Yeah, from where they were, for me, personal experience, from the like evolution of V1 to where we are today, they are by far the one that has done the most to try to make the experience much better for everybody. One last thing for me is, I do wonder, and this is like a longer term deal, if some of these other books try to lean into some contest stuff as well. I mean, we know the big Circa contest here in Las Vegas, and I understand that doesn't necessarily put direct dollars in Derek's pocket over there because he doesn't rake it, but we're going to approach $12 million for this Circa Survivor contest or whatever, which is a lot of money that's getting pumped in before the season ever even starts. And it makes me wonder if some of these people don't look up and go like, hey man, he's getting a lot of people through the door and a lot of money, like going to, you know, if people don't try to copycat, you know, something that has been just a massive, massive success. Because, you know, again, while he's not personally pocketing that, I mean, maybe someone does decide to rake it. Maybe someone decides to do something like that to where it would be a revenue driver. But I mean, the success of those things, I think they're bigger than you and I ever would have even imagined.
Yeah, and the real question becomes a wire act question, right? It's the same thing we talk about the super contest is, can you do this across state lines? Like, the only way we've seen it attempted, and I say attempted with big air quotes right now, is by these, I'm going to call them social sportsbook exchange products that are out there right now. They're trying to do this without going afoul of the Wire Act. And so will the bigger companies like a DraftKings or a FanDuel be willing to try that? You're right. There's a huge opportunity out there in terms of money, but there is also a major regulatory question as well.
Guys, everything we talk about, you know, not today. Today we just came in here. We wanted to give you like a preview of what we're looking for as we head into the season. But every time we talk about an article on here, you can find it over at LegalSportsReport.com. And everything we do is absolutely free. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button. We do appreciate that as well. And if you want to leave a five-star review, even better, complaint department is Adam Candy. So yeah, just any complaints you can send directly over to him for Adam. I'm Matt. Talk to you guys next week.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.